On Tucson Business Radio X now, join Michael Shoup and Carolyn Goldschmidt from HOA Law with another in-depth program and interesting guests with Community Law and your host, Michael Shoup.
Welcome, everyone, to Community Law, live and streaming from the Stewart Title Studio in Tucson, Arizona, our monthly program covering topics and trends in the world of HOAs. My name is Michael Shoup, and I'm joined again by Carolyn Goldschmidt, my legal partner, both of the law firm of Goldschmidt Shoup.
I am here.
Carolyn and I provide legal services focused on real estate and common interest community law here in Tucson, Arizona, and throughout Southern Arizona. We are happy to be joined today by two guests from the HOA industry. First, Rhonda Rael of Mission Management Services, and Ruth Ingoldsby of Vote HOA Now. We're going to be talking about meeting and voting procedures, the issues that come up, problems come up, and I think more importantly, what does a good meeting look like? I wanted to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Time of year, we're in October. Annual meeting season is approaching. And for many communities that can lead to night sweats for for volunteers and for management. Carolyn, when we think about this time of year and we think about the concerns we hear from volunteers and from members about meeting schedules and meeting time, what are some of the big issues you see?
Yeah. Well, I have to start off by saying that Michael and I have the perspective of problems. We don't hear about the meetings that go well. We hear about the problems and the upsets, and a lot of them do have to do with voting. What I've been having happen regularly for the past couple of years is having a candidate withdraw after the ballots go out. And that can cause a lot of upheaval, for one. Others are tie votes, lack of quorum, challenges to the validity of ballots, because sometimes the teller committee or whoever's counting the ballot declares a ballot invalid. Sometimes it's a good reason, sometimes not. You know, for example, we had a case where someone sent their ballot in a different envelope than the return envelope, and the ballot was voided. That wasn't a real good call.
Yeah, the judge didn't in particular like to hear that one very much at all.
Yeah.
That kind of escalation of form over function to that level where you're actually disenfranchising a vote over a technical issue.
Right.
And I think that's a really interesting topic for volunteers and managers out there to understand is we in some ways harp on treating meetings and things with formality. But I think that there's ways in which you can go overboard.
Right.
And start stepping on rights and expectations.
Correct. And actually the reason we get called in most often is when members are in an uproar. And a lot of times we're invited to annual meetings as sort of the bulletproof vest for the board. And, some of the things that make members upset are issues like raising the assessment or imposing a special assessment. Changing from lawns to xeriscape is a very emotional issue that I think gets people more upset than assessments. Limiting parking on common area, things that really affect people in their day-to-day life will bring them to a meeting very vocally.
Right. I've seen a lot recently. I think with maybe the market changing a bit, there's a little bit more positivity in the air, and I'm getting a lot more clients interested in making amendments to their governing documents, trying to address some of the foibles and things that are going on in their community, the way that the nature of their community may have changed. And you put out a notice that you're looking at changing CC&Rs and things like that. That will cause people to perk up, and you will find the groups that disagree with one thing or the other, and they are the most likely candidates to be the ones who will take a strategy of disrupting a meeting versus participating in that process. Since we're here in Arizona, maybe for the listeners out there to get kind of an idea of some of the baseline meeting procedures, voting procedures in Arizona, are there highlights in Arizona as far as meeting procedures?
We do have an open meeting law in both our Condo Act and Planned Communities Act, and that applies mainly to board meetings and when members need to be able to participate and when meetings can be closed. But we're getting far more regulation in voting procedures. In Arizona, proxy voting has been deleted. There are very specific instructions about ballots being signed. And if they're secret ballots, a different way of handling them. And questions come up. People want to revoke their absentee ballot. They give it, and then they learn something. They want their ballot back. But that isn't really covered in the law.
Right. That I guess, is kind of the thing, is we are seeing a change towards more regulation. The statutes are adding detail. But I think in the past, as far as Arizona's concerned, it has been broadly determined by the documents, the governing documents. The statutes have really not had that detail in them. So as you were mentioning, what do you do with the tie vote? How do you deal with these quorum issues? There wasn't a lot of help necessarily in the statutes, and we're seeing some of that fill in, and that might be kind of a trend we see across the country more, is filling in those gaps through a legislative side versus a documentary change.
Well, voting is certainly more of interest on our governmental level, and it's trickled down to HOAs.
Yeah, and I think expectations of sharing of information and entitlement to voice, I think we see a lot of parallels. In the past, the idea when it came to meeting procedures and voting procedures is, as long as a vote was heard, it was received, whether it it had a yes or no on the ballot, or a for or against, or those kind of things didn't come to the forefront. It wasn't an issue. It was whether or not the vote was heard, whether or not the process was followed. And anymore, I think when something doesn't go in a certain direction, maybe the knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, let's look at those procedures. Was everything focused? Is there a way that we might be able to undo this process or this vote that we don't agree with? And that leads to these disruptive issues. Well, again, this is Community Law on Tucson Business Radio, joining Carolyn Goldschmidt and Michael Shoup. I want to turn to now introducing our guests formally for today. And first with us is Rhonda Rail of Mission Management Services here in Tucson, Arizona. Rhonda, you are not a stranger to Tucson, but Mission Management Services is a bit new. Can you bring us up to speed?
Sure. So I've actually been in the HOA industry for over 19 years, coming up on 20 years. Worked with several different management companies, have had multiple experiences with different types of voting issues that we will be discussing. But as far as Mission goes, when we started Mission, we found that there was a need for our type of service. One of the things that we really key in on is customer service and returning phone calls and emails in a timely manner. That's probably the thing that we hear more than anything else with any of the new clients that come on board with us. That's one of the first things they say is like, wow, you returned my call within 24 hours. You know, it wasn't a week later or an email. So Mission, we started in early 2017, and we are growing every day, and we look forward to the future. We have a lot of prospective clients out there already. So
Great. Well, thank you again for joining us. And our second guest is Ruth Inglesby of Vote HOA Now. Thanks for joining us, Ruth.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thanks.
What has been your path with Vote HOA Now to the Tucson area?
Well, first I have to give kudos to Rhonda for 20-year tenure in the industry on the management side of things. I only lasted about 3 years on that side. I was in an office helping, assisting with portfolios, transition management, that kind of thing, overseeing an administrative staff, and then went on site to a very large community of about over 4,000 homes. And I was the assistant manager, and it didn't take me long there to realize, yeah, I wanted to become a vendor for the industry. And I had worked with Vote HOA Now in both my previous roles in the industry and loved their service, loved what they provided, the solutions that they were solving, and said, I want to go work for them. And I'm the first employee in our Arizona office. So I love that I can be local and come down to Tucson for events and things like that and travel around the state and around the country, you know, sharing online voting and how it can help communities solve, as Carolyn said, all those problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, in Arizona, some legislative changes more recent to really kind of kick off the idea that there is a such thing as electronic voting and what that looks like. So,
right. And very recently, the Nonprofit Corporation Act mm-hmm. changed the statute on written ballots to specifically address electronic voting.
Yeah.
So it's a contemplated change for many associations.
And I think can truly be an avenue for simplifying if used in the right way, which I'm sure we'll we'll talk about more.
Absolutely.
So, Rhonda, I'm gonna pick on you first.
All right.
But as we mentioned earlier, Carolyn and I see problems. That's part of what we do, and it's very easy to think that in the HOA industry and in the HOA realm, it's just full of problems, full of mistakes, full of a mess. What do you see as a well-run, effective, healthy meeting? What does that look like?
Well, depending on the documents, and even if the documents don't have it, one of the things that we find to be helpful for the community is to get a nominating committee. So they can go out there and they can get the candidates to be on the ballot. That's probably the biggest issue that we're filing right now is the interest, because people seem to, their life has changed as far as how busy they are. They really don't want to get involved in this. There is a problem. So finding candidates to be on the ballot is probably the hardest thing right now to do. So that's really the key thing, that trying to get a nominating committee. Because one thing that we find when you send out a postcard or a letter or an email saying, hey, we're looking for candidates, getting people to respond to that is not as effective as going door to door or making a phone call to get them on the ballot to so you can fill in those positions.
Okay. And when you talk about a nominating committee, is that something that's put together by the board or is that outside of the board? Can you give us more information on what you see and how that's put together?
Yeah, there's some that actually specify in their documents that they have to have a nominating committee, and the nominating committee has to be chaired by a board member. And then they can choose committee members, usually just ask for volunteers, and then hopefully they can pound the pavement, so to speak, and try to find people to get on the ballot.
And are you seeing an increase in the use of a nominating committee in order to take that pressure off and to go out and find candidates?
Well, what you find is that if it's a homeowner approaching a homeowner, they're much more effective as opposed to management company contacting a homeowner. They're much more willing to, knowing that the people that are reaching out to them are already involved in the community, and it's like, okay, we can get you involved and come and come check it out.
Right. So one of the ways in which a meeting, whether it be an annual meeting for an election, runs appropriately is to do, it sounds like, the upfront work to get the boots on the ground, get those candidates in. So you have a full slate there for the members to actually engage with.
Right. Because one of the issues that you will run into if you don't have a full slate is that nasty word write-in. because you never know what you're going to get, so to speak. So you have to be kind of careful. So you want to make sure that you have enough candidates to fill the positions so that one person that decides to write in, is just not one vote for a write-in candidate.
Right, right. Prohibitions or concerns about having write-ins, Carolyn?
Yeah, that's a good point. In the best of circumstances, the bylaws will specifically state that there shall be write-ins. My advice, generally, when I get the call of we don't have enough candidates, can we use write-in lines? I ask, have you ever done that before? Is that part of the accepted procedure for this association? So if it isn't in the bylaws and hasn't been done before, there is no provision for write-in elections in any of the laws that apply to HOAs in Arizona.
Yeah, something we like to do is two things. One is we tell the committee, the nominee committee, go out and find those candidates to get on the ballot. And then two, I said, you may miss somebody, but that doesn't mean, so we put a line on our ballots that says, if you're interested in serving in the future, sign your name below.
Wow.
And then we can find candidates that way, because if they're not approached, they may not even know or care.
Well, that's very smart.
Then we reach out to those individuals and we say, hey, start coming to the board meeting so you get a feel of what it's like. And if you're still interested when the next annual meeting comes around, perfect, we'll put you on the ballot.
Well, I find it very interesting that you focus on nominating committees, because I think what Michael and I see more often than not is that the nominating committee is called for in the bylaws and never formed, because the boards are so cynical and negative about the idea of getting anybody to do anything. And I've actually been in court with a homeowner arguing that the election was invalid because there was no nominating committee. Now, in that case, we were arguing about it more than a year after the election. So the judge said, well, we're already into another election. You've really waived your right to complain about this. But it's an issue.
Well, and in Arizona, with our administrative process that we have, that is an avenue, dispute resolution process in Arizona, where a homeowner can file a petition with the Arizona Department of Real Estate and basically assert that there are provisions of the governing documents or the statutes that an association is not following. And as Carolyn said, the lack of the use or the lack of the appointment of a nominating committee is one of those hotbed areas for that technicality to say you didn't have a nominating committee, so this whole election is void. You didn't follow that process. I mean, in the case Carolyn was talking about, you had kind of this, you waited too long idea. But I see it too, that ultimately the question is, has the election gone by? Has somebody raised that objection at a time where it could be dealt with? Or did they wait until after the election was over? I actually had a brief experience with the administrative law process here, where that's what the administrative law judge was interested in hearing, is why didn't you bring up this issue when the association could do something about it?
And why did you vote in the election?
Absolutely. Did you yeah. want to be a candidate? Those kind of questions. So nominating committees, very, very interesting on both sides. But I think the thing to take away is, if you have that provision in your documents, obviously follow that provision. And look for some professional help on how you gather those names. Ruth, I wanted to not let go of this write-in thing as we were talking about it. From your perspective in the services of Vote HOA Now, how are write-in candidates dealt with in an electronic voting?
Exactly the same way in paper.
Okay.
You can have the write-in, especially if it's in their bylaws, that can be put on the electronic ballot. Nobody else would see who was written in. Just like a paper ballot, you write it in, it gets sent in the mail. Same thing online. So when you get the results, if there's three write-ins for Mickey Mouse, if he's not there to accept the nomination, then that's not going to be a valid candidate. Okay. So, but the process is absolutely the same.
Great, great. Well, I wanted maybe to kind of flip it on the other side, something we've had where there's not enough candidates possibly to fill the positions, and the concern about directors continuing in their positions after the meeting, or filling the vacancies by appointment afterwards. Are there concerns, even if appointment is allowed, are there concerns about letting the election go and then just appointing somebody afterwards?
Well, you certainly have to try. The association needs to try to have an election. And if they don't meet quorum, if they don't get the threshold number of votes to have a valid election, it depends on the association. Some try again. But more often than not, if there's been a history of apathy, the board just doesn't try. And interestingly, in our Arizona Nonprofit Corporation Act, the term of a director is whatever the term is in the bylaws or until the successor is elected and qualified. So technically, if someone's term is up and nobody was elected to fill that term, that board member is still on the board unless he or she resigns. And if there were people whose term was up who don't want to serve anymore, and there wasn't an election, in effect, they've resigned. And now there's a vacancy that can be filled by the board, assuming that's what the bylaw, that's the most typical procedure.
Is that something you've dealt with, Rhonda?
There's one time where we had an association where they didn't have anyone to run for the board, and their bylaws actually said that they could only serve two consecutive terms, and then they had to be off for a year. And what they ended up doing, knowing that they did not have any candidates, they had their attorney. They were able to amend their bylaws before the annual meeting so that the person could continue, run again by taking that out of their bylaws.
And that was probably bylaws that could be amended by the board.
And it was they could be amended
best
by the
best amendment procedure possible.
Yes.
And that's one of the benefits that one of the problems that online voting solves is we hear all the time that our community has never made quorum since it got turned over to owner control. And it's been 12 years, it's been 16 years, 8 years, whatever, what have you may. And we hear it all the time that this is the first year because we did the online vote. And now they're not having to appoint and beg people to fill positions to volunteer.
So you're actually seeing, from a standpoint of data, verifiable data, actions that people are participating more with an electronic vote option?
Absolutely. And especially not just in Arizona, this is an issue nationwide. So, and not all bylaws or statutes, I should say, are as clear and well-written as some of ours are about appointments and things like that. So some of them in other areas are operating illegally because they're technically not allowed to appoint and nobody ran, or they ran but didn't have quorum. So all those kind of issues.
Yeah, and I've heard of instances where there was so much apathy and the board was so disgusted that they just stayed in office and didn't have elections. And then 5 years down the road, somebody is upset about a letter they got, and they allege the board's illegal and none of their decisions or actions are legal because they haven't had an election.
Yeah. And the annual meeting is the one meeting of the membership that's required by the documents. So you really need to have that meeting.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So from an electronic voting perspective, we have so many bylaws or so many that I read that are obviously written with the idea in mind that the annual meeting is still all the members coming, raising their hands, voting aye or nay, having nominations from the floor. Have you worked with associations to be able to transition from that model and implement electronic voting?
Yes. What we're finding a lot of times, especially here in Arizona, is the annual membership meeting becomes more of a social gathering. People enjoy going to it. They're not coming to complain. They've voted on all the issues that are in front of the membership already. They've elected their board. They can cover what's the achievements of the board for the past year, what they're looking forward to do in the next year, and then they socialize and have pizza and have a good time. A lot of the communities, especially some of the larger on-site communities, really make it a big family affair that children are there and there's games, and it's really a coming together of the community. So the business is still addressed, but it's addressed early, it's done, it's out of the way, and now it's time for everyone to enjoy.
In effect, the voting aspect of the meeting, which was usually one of the primary purposes of that annual meeting, has been dealt with before the meeting
right now
because you have electronic voting absentee.
Right.
It brings up an interesting question. Carol and I talk about it, or we run into it a lot. Aside from the new electronic model that has so many, you know, positives to it, the idea of counting paper ballots before the meeting, whether or not that's a violation of the meeting procedure. Rhonda, how do you handle voting at a meeting when you have absentee ballots and things like that?
Yeah, so we have a mixture of different associations. We have one where they say they're going to count. They have they're using their nominating committee, and they will get together prior to the annual meeting, and they will count the ballots, and then whatever comes in at the meeting that's dropped in when everyone signs in, then the committee adjourns themselves or removes themselves from the annual meeting, goes and counts what ballots are left, and then come out with the results. We do have some communities that, especially if they're small and there's not going to be any arguments or any disputes of who's on, who's running, they give the management company the authority to count them ahead of time, and then we just come to the meeting with the results.
And I see no problem with that if it's a day or two before the meeting.
Yeah.
But all too often I hear from managers that or self-managed boards that they're opening the ballots as they come in. And I find out because I get we just got a ballot and it wasn't signed. And are you opening the ballots? Yes. Well, stop. because it's just not good procedure. And it really leaves a board or a management company open to allegations of
favoritism.
Yeah. Right.
We've heard that a lot, actually, from the online perspective, that when you follow a procedure and switch to primarily online for the votes, it takes the pressure off the manager from somebody coming up and whispering in their ear, hey, am I winning? Do I need to go door knock? Because they don't know. All they know is the numbers we've gotten to reach quorum. So it's really takes that pressure off of them that they're like anybody else. I'll know the night of the meeting, like 2 hours before, that's when the reports come to me.
So your system is set up in such a way that the boards can track how many votes have come in, but how the members have voted is kept
right.
confidential.
And so it's a third-party separation. So it keeps the people who are concerned about the outcome of the vote from being involved in the vote to that level. So, yeah.
Yeah, something that when we have ballots coming in, really what we do is we have a checklist of all the homeowners just to see so we can keep track if they have met quorum or not. So if they haven't, one of the things we like to do is we'll just send out an email blast to everybody and say, hey, you know, please send in your ballot. We haven't met quorum yet. That also puts that reminder that, oh, yeah, we got an annual meeting coming up. And that gets them to respond and get that ballot in. Then once we have quorum, especially with the way the the voting goes now with the envelope, we do not, especially when it's secret, we don't take it out of the envelope. All we're doing is check off the homeowner, then we're taking those to the meeting, and we ask for volunteers who have no participation to it, no involvement, and then we have them count, and we supervise, and we watch over the counting, and then we sign off.
All right. Well, everyone, you are listening to Community Law with Goldschmidt and Shoup, live and streaming from the Stewart Title Studio in Tucson, Arizona. With almost 40 years combined experience, Carolyn and I and our firm Goldschmidt Shoup represent over 400 community associations and cooperatives of all sizes and demographics throughout Southern Arizona. Our small and dedicated staff is committed to efficient, effective, and economical legal representation. Whether you have questions about covenant enforcement, have governing documents that may be overdue for revisions and updates, or have a few assessment delinquencies in your community, you can expect that Goldschmidt Shoup will provide quality advice and practical solutions. So we were talking about this ballot processing aspect. One of the things, in fact, one of the recent changes to Arizona law has been codification, I guess, of how long you keep ballots after the election. And in Arizona, you keep them for 1 year, and they're subject to members being able to ask for those ballots and review that process. Rhonda, have you seen any difference in members requesting to review ballots after elections?
You know, when there's no conflict, you won't hear from anybody asking. But when there are multiple candidates out there and you have a really tight race, then yes, we've had it where someone is requested to review the ballots.
And what does that process look like? Do you have basically the box of ballots set up at your office and the member has to come in and pour over them? Or what does that look like?
Well, we haven't had one in quite a while, but when we did, it was actually, we were at an on-site. So the ballots were on site at the community, and then we had the individual came in there and supervised by board and management while they went through the ballots.
I'm interested. Was there heartburn about having to kind of sit there, have a board member available, or have you be available to watch as somebody was reviewing the records?
It's time consuming because when this happened, it was a large community, and the question was, the developer votes. That's what the big issue was. So they wanted to make sure that the developer voted and how they voted. And so those are the ones that they were specifically were looking for. But it was a large community. And so, yes, they went through every single one.
Ruth, do you get questions about, from an electronic voting standpoint, about how you keep the voting records and that kind of thing?
We do, and it's part of our process that we always talk about, that we are always, since we are specific in what we do to the HOA industry, we don't do schools and unions, so we're making sure we're following not just Arizona state statutes, but every state that we do work in. And since I'm in Arizona, I'm always exclusively looking at all the new legal updates when it comes to online voting. And so our system automatically keeps all of the results for the year. We provide them in electronic format via a spreadsheet so that the association can hang on to that as well. And we've only had one community in Arizona ever say that they had a homeowner wanting to see the results. And so we had to strip a little bit of the personal information off of that, their email address, that kind of thing. But otherwise, they've done it, the same homeowner, a couple years in a row. So it's just his process. And once we provide that sheet, he looks through it and they're good to go. So you really don't have the people contesting the validity of ballots because votes can't be changed. They, you know, nobody can play with them. Ballots don't get invalidated for too many marks, so they're not questioning, like, well, why was this one thrown out? It wasn't in the right envelope. You know, that all those issues go away.
And do you provide the voting data, or is that something, because you can provide it to the association directly or to their manager, that once they have it, they basically have the record they can use as they need?
Right. The only time that they usually come back to us is if they've changed management companies by the time that request came in, you know, within that 60-day time frame. then we have to provide it to the new management company because they might not have gotten all the transition materials and sifted through it to find it.
Right. So do you, does Vote HOA now have maybe a library or a resource to look at stats on voting history?
We don't have a lot of stats on our website, but we do have quite a robust website with lots of information, lots of resources, including language to add to your annual notice that you're going to send out if you're going to start adding online voting, what to include, what to talk to homeowners about. And our vote managers really work one-on-one with each community to make sure that their communication pieces that are going out have the right language in it, because we know every community operates a little bit differently. So we really partner with each community that we work with to make sure that if they're going to put an announcement in a newsletter or in their assessment notice, that they're using the right language and sharing the proper and correct information with their owners.
And we've talked a little bit about how we have some smaller communities that, you know, have some procedures that work one way, but a larger community up to, you know, 4,000 homes maybe has it different. Is there a way that you help associations know when it's a good time to use a third-party vendor?
It's like always a good time. Our smallest association that we've done online voting for is 16 homes, and obviously owners were not on site, and by the time the ballots, you know, followed somebody to Malaysia, the vote was done. Our largest community here in Arizona actually is over 19,000. So there's no such thing as too big or too small in our world. A lot of the smaller communities do think cost is a factor, but, you know, at $500 when you haven't made quorum for 12 years, you have to consider the alternative here. So when it comes down to those kind of things, it's really not a huge cost factor because you're also reducing the paper cost, the mailing cost, postage, and again, you're achieving quorum, getting higher participation, especially with the millennials who don't know where their mailboxes are. They're not going to return paper. So
can you imagine, Carolyn, voting at a meeting of an association with 19,000 homes?
No.
I don't even
It would be a week-long party.
Yeah.
I had a vote count take place after an election for a condominium unit of a few hundred units, and it went well into the night and transferred to the next day. I can't even conceptualize what paper voting or voting at a meeting would look like
for
19,000 homes.
So, yeah, that community had to shut off voting about a week before, and they had to have the committee have multiple committees to start the counts, and they would divide and conquer, and then they'd have to switch their boxes so that they can be confirmed that they were counted correctly. I mean, when we talk about time is money in these kind of situations, absolutely.
You know, one issue that I've had come up over and over again in one of my client communities because of one owner who's fixated on elections. She insists that voting has to be at the annual meeting. And I always bring up these realities of large associations. Hers only have a couple of hundred homes. But the reality is large associations can't have voting at meetings unless the meeting is going to go on for a week.
Yeah, so, I mean, people travel for work, for business.
Right?
Again, they have summer homes, winter homes. I mean, I have to say I was remiss as a homeowner, and I didn't turn in my absentee ballot. And I was not in town the day of the meeting, so I forfeited my right to vote. So I can't really say anything about what they decided.
And because of you, quorum wasn't met.
I have to say I've written some letters similar to that effect that this association's had a long history of apathy, and if you don't show up, you can blame yourself for things not happening. And you know, maybe with that, it's kind of a good segue into talking a bit more about disruptions at meetings, the issue of disruptive members. I can say one of the things I've seen when I think we can all agree that a disruptive member is one who's upset about something. If Rhonda, I think you were saying If the members are happy, you know, they're happy with whatever the vote process is, as long as it's fair and accurate, they're okay. But if somebody's angry, they will find reasons to be disruptive. And I've been involved in meetings where Robert's rules of order have come up. All of a sudden the old esoteric tiny rules about how motions are formed and things all of a sudden becomes an issue and the whole meeting is out of order. And at least from my perspective, I think that for boards, there's this balance between understanding that meetings on some level have to have some aspect of formality to them. And as if you have disruptive members, you have to increase, I think, that level of formality to almost meet that need. But on the same token, I wonder if you can become too technical. And I don't know, Carolyn, if you've kind of seen issues where that technicality kind of bulldozes over practicality.
What I see is that, and again, we just see the problems, but what I'm seeing more increasingly are the owners who are disruptive, not because they're angry, but they're hypervigilant, hypercritical, and live in the land of right and wrong. And they want they believe everything the association does should be right, meaning according to their belief of what right is.
But yet that person doesn't actually run for the board or volunteer for
Correct.
Any committees.
That's right.
That's true.
Right. They're just a director. And when there is someone like that in an association that the board is dealing with, I notice that the board starts to become hyper-formal, hyper-technical, because they want to avoid having this person tell them that they're wrong and be right about it.
Right. Well, I'll go back to Rhonda, kind of full circle where we started. We talked about what a good meeting looks like to you. We talked about nominating committees, but what about procedure? How should a meeting run when it's running, you know, effectively?
Well, for sure, you know, you'll want to make sure there's an agenda that everybody gets to follow, and always have an open forum, whether it's before or after, so that any homeowner can state what their issue is. The other thing that we find that's helpful is we have little pieces of paper that people can fill out if they have questions, because not everybody is okay standing up in front of a group, but yet they still have concerns, and so they'll put it down on paper, and it can be addressed by the board at that time.
As far as the meeting operation, do you like to see a named chairperson who runs the meeting?
Yes, and one of the things that we try to tell our boards, and specifically the president, when they're calling the meeting to order, is that their job is not to engage with the people sitting out there. They're engaged with the board and vice versa. The board, it's a board meeting. They should be talking to each other. If someone has a question, they should be raising their hand and not interrupting the board. Something we like to do too is we put our manager beside the president or whoever is running that meeting, so that we're in their ear telling them whether they need to respond or not respond. Hey, they're out of order. So we're right there helping them, because as everyone knows, your board is our volunteers, and they may not be experienced on how to handle people and conflict and that type of thing. And so it's nice to be right there with them.
In a case, I don't know if I'm sure you have dealt with where there are constant disruptions, or maybe you've come from the last couple meetings where it has devolved into a shouting match or people talking over to you. Are there strategies that you've helped boards develop at their meetings to kind of step off on the right foot?
Yeah, we had one that was, oh man, it was always a screaming match. And so we sat down with the board and we wrote up board meeting procedure as far as what's expected of the people who are in attendance. And we give them the instructions on what they're supposed to do, i.e. how they're supposed to respond, who they're supposed to be talking to, not yelling back and forth out in the audience, that they're addressing the board and specifically the chairperson, whoever that is. And that we found after we put the guidelines out there on what they can and cannot do, it didn't escalate. It really became a lot more
orderly.
And you didn't have, I mean, the people, especially new homeowners, if they come to a meeting and they see that, you won't see them again.
Right. You really manage their expectations, because most often the board doesn't have a response right then. They need to take it under advisement. They need to consider all the ramifications of the question, the issue, the concern. So usually that response of they will take it under advisement and it will be addressed at the next meeting. Telling the homeowners ahead of time that's typically the response helps.
Push, as I've always told boards, I said, if push comes to shove, you can always adjourn the meeting.
Right.
Nothing says you have to sit there and take it and be yelled at and screamed at. Adjourn the meeting.
Yeah. Right. I was invited to a meeting last week, a board meeting, and there were three ladies in the audience that appeared, and that's why I was invited. Every meeting, they come and scream about whatever and they were upset about security or, and the president was the sweetest woman and just was mincemeat. And afterwards we talked about it, and that board needs a parliamentarian, somebody other than the president to keep order and call people out of order. And that's what they're going to do, because there are some owners that will not be quieted. They believe it's their constitutional right to be able to speak up frequently and loudly.
Well, and a lot of people have the misconception of what the difference between a board meeting and a members meeting. They think at a board meeting they can just talk whenever they want, mm-hmm. as opposed to when they're being called upon. As members meeting, you know, they can pretty much say whatever they want at the members meeting. So they have a misconception of what the difference is between a members meeting and a board meeting.
Well, and to your point about parliamentarian, I've advised boards in the past that the president doesn't always have to be the chairperson of the meeting. You might have another director on the board who is of the right demeanor and personality to really run the meeting. There's nothing that's written in stone that says the president has many roles, and you might have somebody like who Carolyn was referencing is wonderful as a president, but they're not a chairperson. So you have that flexibility to be able to run the meetings. So you've been listening to Community Law on Tucson Business Radio. As you hopefully have heard, there's lots of great information shared, and we hope that all of our listeners take that information away. But we do have to say that the information shared on our show is not, nor is it intended to be, legal advice. And no attorney-client relationship is intended or created between the listeners and Goldschmidt Shoup. If you are interested in seeking specific advice or legal representation from us, you may contact us at our office at 520-664-7583 or by email at office@gshoalaw.com. You may also visit our website at www.gshoalaw.com. where you can learn a bit about our firm, our services, and soon be able to listen to our broadcasts on Tucson Business Radio at your leisure. So with that, Carolyn, I think we like to end every show with a little bit of wisdom from you and your experience. And I'm wondering if you have any parting ideas or advice regarding meetings and voting.
I do. Well, first of all, I started off this show talking about candidates withdrawing and tie votes. So I should close the circle and say my advice when a candidate withdraws after the ballots go out is to let the election go on because the candidate waited too long to withdraw. And then if the candidate gets winning votes, they can resign or withdraw at that point. Otherwise, the entire election needs to be scrapped and started again. And of course, a lot would depend on whether you have enough candidates to fill all the spots. As far as a tie vote, you know, in some bylaws that I rewrite, I actually say that tie votes can be resolved by a coin toss, right.
It's been a long day.
That's right. Coin toss. If there's no provision, then there needs to be another election to run off the tie. Generally, I suggest that the manager or a board member speak to the tied individuals and see if one of them wants to withdraw to avoid the runoff. But there have been runoff elections. And lastly, I'd like to dispel some meeting myths that we hear all the time. One is that the president can't make motions or votes. This is not a law. It's not in Robert's Rules of Order. But it's a tradition that some boards have. And they certainly can have it, but it should be in the bylaws. And if it isn't, then there's no reason for the president to hold back. The next is that the treasurer's report needs to be approved. In fact, committee reports are to inform the board. And I think it's better that the board doesn't approve them because there's no reason for the board to bless the committee report unless it's a report that's going to be published to the community, in which case it should be approved before it's released. And another one is that, and we've been talking about quorum, a lot of members, you know, there's all levels of casualness, I think, at meetings. And for both board meetings and member meetings, there is a belief that quorum doesn't matter. But it does. You can't have a valid action unless the quorum, the threshold number of participants, is met. And if there isn't a quorum, then any action taken is not valid, including the election. And lastly, this is my favorite one. You know, every year I see annual meeting minutes on the ballot from last annual meeting. And it always seems so ridiculous to me because most people don't remember the annual meeting. They can't correct it. And the fact is the board can approve the annual meeting at their meeting after a meeting or two after the annual meeting. So at least they're approved minutes by somebody. And it doesn't have to be on the absentee ballot or written ballot for the election.
All right. Thank you very much again. And Carolyn and I would like to thank all of our guests, Rhonda with Mission Management Services and Ruth with Vote HOA Now. And we'd, of course, like to thank our listeners for bringing us along in your car ride, welcoming us into your home, or just finding that time in your day wherever you are to share with us. Carolyn and I hope, of course, that you've taken away something valuable from this show and from our other shows to share with your own company and community, and that you will join us next time on Community Law.
Thank you. And we'd also like to thank our esteemed producer, Mr. Mark Bishop. Thank you.
Makes this all possible. So with that, thank you very much, Tucson. Take care.